'Twas the pod before Christmas, and all through the house not a creature was stirring, except for David Oyelowo, star of Come Away and the Midnight Sky. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that Coleman Domingo, Michael Potts and Glyn Turman, stars of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, soon would be there. The listeners were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of geek queens and nerd grand admiral twat things danced in their heads. And Amon in his kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap, when out in the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the pod booth to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash. It was James Dyer telling me to get on with it.
Get on with it.
I was waiting for you to come up with not a creature was stirring, assholes, except for four assholes coming in the rear.
Three
standard
assholes
two by
in the
two cover formation.
I artfully avoided the Die Hard reference, Jimbo. I tried not to be a walking cliche for once in my life. Hello, pod. I am Chris Hewitt, and welcome to, oh, sad, a single tear rolling down my cheek, the last Empire podcast of 2020, the hellscape of a year. But this pod has given us something to cling on to. Not you guys, obviously all the listeners at home hate this, but it's given the three colleagues of such lethal cunning, including myself, who are in this pod booth today, something to cling on to in this absolute perfect shitstorm of a year. And now it'll be over. We're going to have a little break for 2 weeks.
Hurrah!
Hurrah! Hurrah! Hurrah! How are you going to spend your breaks, two colleagues of such lethal cunning, geek queen Helen O'Hara and nerd grand twat James Dyer?
Hello. I am going to be helping out with my brother and sister and their two tiny children, you know, childcare-wise, and helping out with them. So I'm going to be continuing my mission to indoctrinate my young nephew into geekdom. We're doing super well already. He's already addicted to, like, the Lego droid tales, the Star Wars ones. His favourite book is Where's the Wookiee, which is obviously a twist on Where's Wally. And he can name, about five out of six bounty hunters. So he's doing really well. I'm so proud. And I just need to continue his education.
Excellent. Jimbo, what are you going to be doing?
Well, partly I'm going to be watching a heroic amount of television, I think.
What?
We are doing an episode of the Pilot TV podcast literally the day we come back to work. So I need to have watched a ton of the new Stand adaptation, which I'm actually very excited about, and a bunch of other things. We're going to be reviewing, I think, season 3 of Cobra Kai as well. And A Discovery of Witches, Helen. A Discovery of Witches is finally coming back after like a 2-year absence, and I am down for that YA witch goodness. So
you're
that's
such a teenage girl. People just don't know to
it's
look
true.
At you, but
it's
you
true.
Are literally a 13-year-old girl.
But more important than any of that, I'm going to be taking my Emperor's exam over Christmas. So by the time I come back, I will be Empire's Nerd Emperor, because I will have passed my exams.
I refuse.
So that's exciting.
You think somehow you're going to be doing an inordinate amount of cheating on that test, but perhaps that qualifies you to be an Emperor in the first place.
I don't know.
Indeed.
How about you, Chris?
I don't know. I have no real plans for the holiday season, apart from I've had one day off all year, and I intend to have
more days off.
Two days
make it
off.
Two.
if I can get up to 2 days off over the holiday period, I'll be very, very happy indeed. And
it's going to happen. I believe in you.
I'm not so sure. I've looked at the amount of podcasts I have to edit over the Christmas break, and I'm not entirely sure. There is a backlog.
There is. Yeah. Hey, remember all those historic Avengers ones?
Oh, they're gone.
Hey, we've got all the MCU.
They're gone.
Now, clearly, you're going to be doing all of those over Christmas, as well as the Star Wars
they're
ranking.
Gone.
So
they have disappeared into the ether. I lost them.
They are.
I want to say I lost them.
You're kidding.
I deliberately deleted them to make sure that they would never darken my doors again. Now, if we do retro MCU ones, we're going to have to do them from scratch. But hey ho, you know, such is life, such is luck. Yeah, no, there's loads of stuff to be edited over the winter break. We got our spoiler specials for. This feels like I'm plugging now, but I'm not. I tell you, I'm not. We have spoiler specials for Wonder Woman 1984. I've got to edit that. We got spoiler specials for Soul. I've got to edit that. We got all sorts of stuff. But hopefully I will get a chance to sit down with my good lady wife and watch some films. That would be quite nice. Although I always have the dilemma over Christmas that there's a shit ton of football. And they put the darts on as well. The World Darts Championship comes on also. So I go into each day with the best of intentions to spend the evening watching movies. And then it's like, oh, should we just stick the arrows on instead? And so we end up watching that for a good 2 to 3 hours.
I mean, I understand.
It's just the greatest theatre, the greatest entertainment. Yeah. It's extraordinary stuff. It really is. Mm. Athletes, the prime of their life, peak physical condition.
Well, I mean, by that token, so were all of us. So I suppose we should accept that without too much quibbling.
I fully believe I could win the BDO World Championship if I just practice hard enough over Christmas.
Remember that one time I came in and randomly threw darts and won a game?
Was that at the Flight Club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, the first rule of Flight Club.
is that we don't talk about that. We talk about other stuff instead. But listen, I hope to have a great Christmas. I hope you guys have a vaguely adequate Christmas.
Oh, thanks.
And the same to all the listeners. But then maybe let's save the Christmas platitudes for right at the end of the podcast.
God bless us, everyone.
Everybody. Why do you sound like C-3PO saying that?
Yes.
Oh,
C-3PO
is Christmas.
Tiny Tim, isn't he? If you were doing Star Wars Christmas Carol. We're not doing that again. We did the MCU Christmas Carol a couple of weeks ago. We shouldn't do it with Star Wars.
I mean...
But it would be 3PO, wouldn't it?
It would be 3PO. It should be little Anakin, but screw that guy.
Little tiny Tim going, we seem to be made to suffer.
It's our lot in life.
Palpatine is Scrooge, isn't he?
Vader.
He'd have to be Vader because there has to be a redemption arc, doesn't there? Palpatine has no redemption arc.
That's true. That is true.
Or it could be Kylo Ren. It could be Ben. It could be Ben Solo. He could be Scrooge.
No.
No, I think Vader is Scrooge, and then the three ghosts are Padme and Obi-Wan.
Clearly Obi-Wan. And Yoda has to be one, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Because they're all Force ghosts.
Yeah. It'll be fine. It's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is good. This is good. This is a project to work on over the Christmas period.
Admiral Akbar needs to be some kind of presence of like a ghost of Christmas yet to be, so he can be just like, you know, it's a trap! don't do that again. You know,
he gets the best line in the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special as well, when he gives a gift to Lando, and Lando goes, oh, I hope it's a cape, and he goes, it's a wrap.
Does he go, it's a wrap, like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not very good at impressions.
You didn't sell it.
You know this.
You really didn't sell it.
Oh, look, I mean, we all have our strengths. I don't know what mine are, but they definitely aren't impressions.
They don't include conversational Mon Calamari.
No, sadly not.
I'm hungry now. Mando finishes tomorrow. We're all going to be a little bit bereft.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, this is such a shame. Maybe Baby Yoda could be Tiny Tim because of the size thing. But no, I think 3PO is the way to go with this.
Size really matters not.
Yeah. I once suggested on Twitter that someone should make a Christmas Carol movie about a director making a Christmas Carol movie, and he's visited by ghosts telling him that that's a terrible fucking idea and you should stop making Christmas Carol films because we've had enough of them. So he's visited by the ghost of a Christmas Carol past, Christmas Carol present, and Christmas Carol movie yet to come. And then in the morning he wakes up and decides to make Transformers 7 instead. So that's what I will be working on over the Christmas period, along with my Home Alone reboot, in which Harry and Marv, the real heroes, and I realize I'm going full Thanos James here with this, but the real heroes of the Home Alone series are Harry and Marv, who are two likable knockabout. Yes, they're rogues. Yes, they're scoundrels. Yes, they're criminals. But it cannot be emphasized enough how much of a little shit Kevin McAllister is and how much he deserves what's coming to him. And he will get that in my Home Alone reboot.
Wow.
/ sequel, in which Harry and Marv are now in a nursing home and find themselves besieged by a psychotic orderly who bears an uncanny resemblance to a young kid that they once had a run-in with in Chicago and New York. And they rally the other members of the nursing home to fight back against him one night with anvils and tins of paint and electrical devices and tarantulas and all sorts. Yeah. It's basically called, it's just kicking the shit out of Kevin McAllister. It's what he should have had coming to him years ago.
Well, if we're doing festive fancy movies, I quite like to see sort of Todd Haynes reteam with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara for a kind of festive special. And they'd
Here
call
we go.
It a Christmas
Here we go.
Carol.
Here we go.
But
Here
Carol
we go.
Was a Christmas movie. So.
Well, not, you know, oh, sure. you found the flaw in my plan. Damn it. They just called it the wrong thing.
They did.
I realized today Superman the movie is a Christmas movie because it was directed by one of Santa's reindeer, Richard Donner.
Wow.
whose work I've always preferred to Richard Blitzen, Richard Prancer, and of course, Richard Comet.
This is awkward.
It's Christmas Eve.
It's the time of miracles.
Everything is Christmas. Yes.
So now, be of good cheer and get on with the podcast. Yes.
All right, here we go. There we go. Finally. It's time for the three facts structure, the last one of the year. What have you guys got for me? What Christmas presents have you got for me? What are you going to wrap up in a nice big bow for me? Jimbo.
I do have one for you. I'm breaking with my tradition of banging on for ages in a kind of vain attempt that I'll kind of wear you down and make you give up on this whole cursed section. My fact today is quite short.
Can I ask that as a... Oh, thank God. I was going to say, could I ask as a Christmas present that this is a short one?
It is. It is a short. Good. It is a short Mission Impossible fact, but don't worry, I'm not going to shout it at you. So this is something I did. Topical joke there. This is something I did not know until this week, although I'm sure everyone else does. And that is that the iconic theme to Mission Impossible is in fact Morse code for Mission Impossible. Did you know that?
I did not.
Dun, 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 it's dash dash dot dot dash dash dot dot, which is MI in Morse code.
Hang on, that doesn't make sense because those would be the same letters, dash dash dot dot dash dash dot dot.
No, dash dash is M. Dot dot is I. Dash, so it's dash, M-I,
dot,
M-I.
Dash, dot. What's a dot dot? Dash. Okay, so it's just
dot,
a dash.
Dot dot is I, dash dash
but it's
is
not,
M.
It's not a note thing, so it's not like dash dash, because it would be just, if it was, you know, in that case, it would just be dash 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 dash.
Yes.
Which isn't as tuneful. Yes.
It is dash dash dot dot, so because it's the longer note, so it's dun.
That's
dun,
great.
Dun, dun. Yeah, so it's M-I,
well done,
M-I.
Mission
Impossible, Mission Impossible.
Okay, well, James has won. There's no need for me to go.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You know, I may not have known that, but I will say that there is a grand tradition of using Morse code in theme tunes, but mainly bound to television. Did you know that, for example, that the theme tune of or Some Others Do Have Him, written by the great Ronnie Hazelhurst, spells out Some Others Do Have Him
does
in
it?
Morse code as well? It does.
Sing it
and,
for me.
And well, it's underlined. The main melody is...
I remember it. The bass line is like
No, I think that bit's Morse code, but it's just like the same thing with the Mission Impossible. Okay. So it's, you know, the notes are different, but the actual that's Morse code.
Wow.
And then that's the RTD2 remix. And then the theme tune for Inspector Morse, of course, has Morse code in it as well. So at the beginning, when you know Barrington Fellung's music comes in, you hear the beginning, it goes beep, 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 which is Morse code for Lawrence Fox as a bell end.
It's remarkably prescient. He's a hell of a detective.
Wow, that is extraordinary. How could he have known?
It's all in the Morse. How prescient was Barrington Fellung with that?
Wow.
It's amazing. Quite incredible. What a man. What a hero. That's a good fact. Hell's bells.
I have another fact.
Oh, fuck
what?
Me.
Sorry. Well, because we're only three of us here, and it has to be the three fact structure. So I have to give you
sure,
a second fact.
Sure.
And this is
Bring
a
it.
Last minute addition because someone tweeted it to me for starting the podcast.
On.
And that's to continue my sort of trifecta of Love Actually facts. He sent me to
Twitfecta, more like.
Indeed. So Richard Kirk sent me a link to Keira Knightley on what's his chops? The terrible one. Jimmy Fallon, that's the one.
The terrible one.
We like the Jimmies.
The Devil's Court Jester. And apparently, you know, when we recently did something on Love Actually, but Keira Knightley wears a very noticeable hat in the scene where she comes over to Andrew Lincoln's to look at the video. You know, she's wearing a big old felt hat. And apparently she says on the talk show, the only reason she was wearing that hat is because she had the biggest spot of her life in the middle of her forehead and makeup were completely unable to do anything about it. And presumably CG wasn't advanced enough at that point. And so someone just said, put a fucking hat on her. So she's got a hat with a big old peak and it's just to cover a spot. And that's why she's wearing it.
Fair play. I can respect the hustle.
Yeah, respect the hustle, but also I guess it's fair enough that she had a spot because, you know, she was 17 when she filmed the movie.
She really
and her
was.
Character was in a relationship with a much older man and being fancied by another much older man. It's fucking sleaze central. What the hell? Anyway, if you want to listen to our thoughts on Love Actually, we have recorded a retro Love Actually spoiler special, which is
great.
Available to subscribers or will be available once I've edited it. It'll definitely be before Christmas, and that will be this year, I should specify. And we're also doing a retro Christmas spoiler special for National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation with the director Jeremiah S. Chechik. So if you're a fan of that movie, as I am, and as I discovered, Nick and Helen are perhaps less so.
No, I still like it. Like, it's not in my top 5 Christmas movies, but it's in the top 20.
Your middling enthusiasm came over for the movie in the podcast.
Thanks.
It's all good. So that's going to be available in the week of, when's Christmas? Next week?
Fuck! Next week.
Next week. So they'll be available next week. Days off. Who needs them? Anyway, Helen, what's your fact?
My fact is about movie Snow. I got thinking about movie Snow this week and I started looking into it. So there have been lots of different ways, of course, of doing it. In 1925, Charlie Chaplin tried to do the real thing for the gold rush, literally took people up a hill in Nevada in the middle of winter. And
did he come down a mountain?
It was massively
difficult.
Was he the
Englishman who went up a hill and came down a mountain?
And came down a mountain, yeah. But no, loads of the cast and crew became sick, and Chaplin finally couldn't do pratfalls because it was too icy. So they had to go back to the studio and use a mixture of salt and flour in that film.
Wow. To hilarious effect, no doubt.
I know. In the late 1920s, there was a firefighter on set, though, of one film who recognized that they were using these big sheets of kind of cotton batting, you know, that kind of felty stuff, as a fake snow. And he thought, well, that's not safe because that's obviously flammable. What we need is something that isn't flammable. How about asbestos? Not kidding. Asbestos was used under the names Pure White and Snowdrift for movie Snow from the 1930s right through to the 1950s. Even in things like The Wizard of Oz, where it's in the poppy fields, that's asbestos. Incredibly, incredibly unsafe.
Is there a long history of the cast of The Wizard of Oz dying of cancer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not good for you. I'm going to go ahead and say that. I don't care if it makes me controversial. Asbestos, not good for you. Don't do it.
Snowflake.
I know, I really am. Luckily, the cast of It's a Wonderful Life were spared that because they needed quiet snow because there was so much snow in that film. They needed it to be quiet, so they used the kind of foam from fire extinguishers mixed with water and sugar and soap for that one. My favourite, though, is Dr. Zhivago, which was shot for its release in northern Spain in summer. And it was meant to be, obviously, you know, Russia in winter for the most part. So to bring that kind of frozen estate, if you remember his frozen estate, to life, what they had to do was basically cover this entire house in hot wax, which they dripped everywhere. Then they put on cold water to make it freeze. And then they topped it by sprinkling marble dust all over it, which is also what they used for the outdoor scenes over the countryside to make it all look shiny and glistening.
Wow.
But yeah, snow. Difficult.
That's good. So, although, you know, I personally would have gone with what John McTiernan did, where he used $640 million in negotiable bearer bonds in Die Hard, which I thought made a very effective snow blanket.
I mean, that's definitely the most stylish way of doing it, for sure. Yeah. But they now use mostly recycled paper, which is a bit more boring.
I've heard mashed potato as well.
Well, you can mash potato. You can do the twist. It's fine.
No, that's a twist. All right, they were two fantastic facts there from Jimbo and Helen, but now, as ever, it falls to me to judge the winner. Let me see. Who was the best?
What about my facts?
Hang on, who said that? Who said that? Where did that come from?
Just over here, Chris.
Holy shit, it's Corin Hardy.
What?
What? Corin, how long have you been there?
Pod crashed.
I've just crashed in on my Santa sleigh with my facts.
All right, okay. This is highly unorthodox and unusual, but okay, that's fine. I'll go with it. I will accept it. Corin has gate crashed the three fact structure out of the blue, completely unrehearsed. What is your fact?
My fact, Chris and team, is that I'm screening a series
and
of
other people who are here.
It's that I'm screening a series of Christmas movies this weekend at the Uckfield Picture House down in here in Sussex. Thankfully, nice. We still are able to screen them and the cinema remains open. And it's called My Nightmares Before Christmas Weekend.
I like it.
This doesn't feel like a comedy season. It's Love Actually. It's a holiday.
Yeah, it's the opposite to those, exactly. It's the antidote. It's the antidote. Now, Uckfield's Picture House, a lovely local cinema, they've asked me to compose some of my favourite alternative Christmas movies to put on this weekend. So we're going to be screening on Friday night Die Hard.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Naturally.
And which is a Christmas movie, as we all know. And, don't start that one. Saturday is Gremlins.
Yes.
A Tim Burton double bill on Sunday with Nightmare Before Christmas and Batman Returns.
Oh, yes. Hello.
This is an amazing weekend.
That's fantastic not bad. Lineup.
Yeah. Although, can I suggest, I know it's too late to change it because we're recording this on a Thursday and this will be going out on Friday. Okay. But can you swap Die Hard with the Tim Burton double bill, because Die Hard is one of Jimbo's favourite films and Sunday is his birthday, and it would be a lovely thing to do for Jimbo's birthday. He could come down and do a special Q&A.
I can call up. Die Hard's actually sold out, which I'm excited about. It's in the Lounge, which is a new cinema in Uckfield, which is sort of plush, very small plush seats, table service, perfect for the times we're living in. I can try and personally call the sort of 40 people who are coming along and postpone it if you like.
Yes, hello, Liz.
Is it going to be experiential? Will people have to kind of walk on broken glass coming in? Will they be showered with bearer bonds at the end? Is it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everyone has to come in a sweaty white vest and they have to leave out the exit with a fire hose wrapped around
them. Just dive out the third floor window.
Yeah, they have to have a watch. They have to be wearing a watch and you have to drop them off the top of the top of the Uckfield Picture House. Yeah, I sure hope that's not a hostage. Oh man, what an incredible quadruple bill. That's fantastic. So why those films in particular?
So, I mean, I had a long list. My long list would be sort of Rare Exports, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, Krampus, Rocky IV, Edward Scissorhands, L.A. Confidential, Long Kiss Goodnight, those kind of movies. But I honed it down like you do if you're putting on a gig at a rock concert and you're trying to figure out a sort of chemistry that would flow through Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And I figured that going to see Die Hard on a Friday night just felt right.
Yeah.
And then the magic of Gremlins on a Saturday, and then a Tim Burton double bill on the Sunday with a sort of matinee for the kids. So, but in terms of those movies, you know, I don't think you can really beat them as movies, but as Christmas movies, the kind of atmosphere in them. I made a little criteria list to sort of check. Yeah, I treat this quite seriously, you know, to try and capture the spirit of Christmas quite literally in some of those movies. In terms of that feel you get at Christmas, you know, how different times in the year you gravitate towards certain movies, and that feel at Christmas when you're kind of, whether you're at home with the fire on or with some mulled wine or in this case out at the cinema, there's something about them that, you know, Gremlins all sort of stuffed in the cinema singing along to Snow White, or the birth of the penguin in Batman Returns, taking you into this sort of snowy, gothic, fairy tale, superhero movie. So they all contain, I think, the spirit of Christmas, and also in their stories, even though they're kind of a bit more arch at times. They're actually, you know, Die Hard has got this sort of goodwill to all men.
Yeah.
And women.
Except terrorists, but, you know, everyone
yes.
else.
Yes.
Good luck to most men.
Yeah. Is the Gremlin screening like a late one and everyone has to finish their popcorn before midnight or have it taken off them? It's like,
that's a great idea. If it wasn't hard enough just to get a movie in the damn cinema at all, then I would do a late one, a midnight performance.
Isn't it? Is Uckfield must be like the only tier 2 zone left in the country. It's like, it's the safe zone. Everyone's making a pilgrimage. The last place we can see films.
You can't make a pilgrimage there. You can't. You have to be
I'm
there.
Slightly worried. Yeah. Slightly worried that by doing this little announcement on the podcast, it's a bit like putting an ad on Facebook for some kind of COVID party. We're not. But it's very, just to reiterate, it's very, very safe. Uckfield is a beautiful old cinema. It's 104 years old, family run. And they treat the safety very seriously.
It's going to be Escape from New York by the end of the weekend.
just put a massive dome over it. You'll be totally fine. That sounds amazing. My God. So this in a way, because you had been talking about doing a season of different films before the last lockdown. So this is a kind of a pivot into Christmas with this.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all battling it, aren't we, in terms of trying to make plans and be able to take pull them off. And the original plan, which is going to go ahead next year once it's more possible, which will be called Corin Hardy and Friends, will be a series of screenings that I'm curating with other directors invited as guests, either in person or via Zoom. I've got Edgar Wright, Gareth Evans, Chad Stahelski, Alice Lowe, Andy Muschietti, Ben Wheatley, and a host more, who are gonna choose three movies to screen on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and introduce them in person or via Zoom to the audience live in the cinema on the Friday night every 2 weeks through sort of when we start in middle of end of January through until I can no longer do it, but I'm gonna give it all I got. So when we have dates for that, we will be letting you guys know. And
excellent.
Everyone can come down to Upfield's Picture House. But I think it was something in this current period where, strangely, you know, cinemas have actually got a lack of movies that they can actually screen. Putting on older movies seems like a really nice idea. But then I wanted to add something that, you know, people who sit on their sofas and can watch those old movies can't get at home, which is sort of a bespoke introduction by people who love or have been inspired by the movies.
On this lineup, I've never seen Gremlins on the big screen. I've never seen Nightmare Before Christmas on the big screen. Die Hard, we did for your birthday a couple of years ago, Jimbo, didn't we?
We did. We saw the 70 mil print at the Prince Charles.
Wow. It was amazing. 70 mil? The whole movie? Wow.
Yeah. Very exciting.
I have never seen Gremlins. No,
really?
No. I don't think, because I was too young to see Gremlins at the cinema when it first came out. And then I watched it in millions of times on VHS, and it was one of those movies that most inspired me. But I don't think I've seen it at the cinema. I think I've seen Die Hard, but not for some time. And I definitely have seen Nightmare Before Christmas a few times, and Batman. But I'm really excited about Batman Returns, because it's been a while since I watched the movie. I keep remembering parts of it, and right now.
Michelle Pfeiffer in that movie is just all-time amazing.
So are you going to be about doing Q&As at this, or introducing them, or cosplay, or what's the deal?
You're definitely dressed up as Catwoman.
Definitely cosplay. Yeah. I will be Jack Skellington again. Yeah, no, I wasn't going to, but I think I might, since because originally I sort of said, let's just create a cool weekend of movies. I didn't know if I'd be able to get to them. And then a minute we set them, I was like, I want to see that. So I'm going to go to all of them, and maybe I will give a little introduction just because I'm there, and it feels like it's going to be a sort of unique little gathering of people coming to see them.
Oh man, I'm very, very jealous. We're obviously in Tier 3 in London. Cinemas have been closed. There's the situation, the mad situation of there were a couple of press screenings of Wonder Woman 1984 before the lockdown happened. We saw these press screenings of Wonder Woman 1984. There is apparently a post-credit sting on Wonder Woman 1984.
What's that?
That they wouldn't show to journalists, but we can't now go to see the film in cinemas. So I don't know what it is. No idea what the hell it is. So won't someone play the smallest violin in the world just for us, please?
I'm playing it.
Thanks, man. Thank you. It means a lot. But listen, we got to let
you
go.
I'm going to play it here. This is the tune I'll play.
That's pretty right, yeah.
Okay, that's terrifying.
That's too good.
All right, Gizmo.
Never feed Chris after midnight.
Light. When journalists are denied their post-credit stings, they do turn into gremlins. Yes, so that is pretty much right.
That is actually true.
Also, don't get us wet. That's a big one.
I'm not even gonna.
Yeah, we're gonna leave that.
Shall we? But yeah, that's a fantastic thing. I'm very, very jealous that you're doing this. I'd really love to come along and see at least one of these. But damn you, COVID restrictions can't do it. But
if you live in Sussex, you're golden.
Mayday lift soon.
Absolutely. If you are in and around Corin's general sphere, then by all means, do go along to see it. So how can people do this? You can go to picturehouseuckfield.com. For ticket details or just on Twitter at picturehouseuck.
And there's still some seats for Gremlins and Batman Returns. I believe Die Hard is actually sold out, and Nightmare Before Christmas is almost, and they've put on extra screenings actually of them, two more screenings in the week for anyone that feels deprived.
Are you going to be carving Christmassy pumpkins, or are you done now?
If I could get them, I'd be carving them, man. I mean, it's just a little. I can maybe do some squash.
Or a turkey. Just carving a turkey in the style of a gremlin. And before we let you go, this has been a hell of a year, but you've been fairly busy, obviously Gangs of London, and was doing Gangbusters, and what's 2021 hold for you?
Well, I've been flat out since finishing Gangs of London Series 1 and working on Gangs of London Season 2 throughout this year, ready to make it next year. And I have an exciting array of features bubbling, which I'm very much looking forward to getting stuck into. I'm missing my monsters.
You're surrounded by them right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but I need to bring some to life and that aren't just the humankind. But it's exciting to know that people are getting through these productions. I just saw that Johannes Roberts has just finished shooting Resident Evil yesterday, mm-hmm. and they are getting through them even in the COVID restrictions. Mm-hmm. We just have to keep battling on and being safe.
I believe Mission Impossible 7 is still going, still shooting as well. I think there was something about that in the paper this week.
They're not shutting it down, I can tell you that.
That is for damn sure. Fingers crossed that 2021 brings you, back on a movie set, back behind a camera and unleashing all kinds of mayhem. But thanks for dropping in. In the meantime, I will say I'm just going to judge the fact section, 3-fact structure. Jimbo's fact was good. Morse code. Helen's fact was bad snow. Corin's fact was about cinema and the fact you can go see movies in the cinema. So therefore, this week's winner, the last winner of 2020 of the 3-fact structure, you may think the fix is in, you'll be absolutely right, is Corin Hardy.
Yeah!
Well done, sir.
That seems fair.
Thank you very much, Santa Chris. And thanks for having me. I shall see you all. Have a great Christmas.
Cheers.
Cheers. Happy Christmas.
Bye, Corin.
What an unexpected visitor that was.
Yes. Wow. I had no idea Corin was going to drop in.
Not in any way prearranged. Just to let people know that he can't do that, just in case
just drop in into
Squadcast and drop in on the podcast. Can't quite do that. You do have to set up something beforehand. Okay, so that's 3-fact structure done and dealt with for another year. Farewell, 3-fact structure. When you return, you shall be bigger and better than ever before. Perhaps James and Helen will use a Christmas break to get the Grinch out of their systems and learn to love the 3-fact structure.
Never!
Never, I tell you. Never.
It would take 3 ghosts. No, 4 ghosts for me to start to love
ghosts.
It.
3 ghost structure. That's what it would need. But anyway, let's tackle some listener questions now. And I mean questions because it's Christmas and there's a time of questions. Here's the first one. It comes from @FalShopaholic, who simply asks, best Mrs. Claus? I probably could best Mrs. Claus, actually. I mean, she's quite an elderly lady. Mm. Probably not that handy in a fist fight. So yes, I think I could best Mrs. Claus. Mm. Thank you very much indeed.
Do you think she means who was the best Mrs. Claus?
On second thought, yes.
Hmm.
Well, I've ordered the sword now.
The sword?
The sword, yes.
Seems harsh.
Well, her husband, Santa Claus, he might have something going for him, you know?
Right, I guess so.
Yeah. So I'm just worried in case he gets vengeful. Anyway, yes, best Mrs. Claus. Who is the best Mrs. Claus on cinemas?
I'm going to say Lorelai Gilmore from Bad Santa.
I mean, did they get married? I mean, she's at best a common law Mrs. Claus.
Yeah, I'm not saying she was his actual wife, but she was, you know, I think she knew him in the biblical sense.
Oh, I'm pretty sure she did, but, you know. Yeah, I think that much is clear. I'm going to say Judy Cornwell. In Santa Claus the movie is the definitive Mrs. Claus for me because she plays it quite straight, but she's a really nice one.
It is the answer. It is the answer. You didn't particularly like Goldie Hawn in Christmas Chronicles 2, did you?
To be clear, I love Goldie Hawn. My problem was that they didn't have enough Goldie Hawn in Goldie Hawn's Mrs. Claus. I thought she was kind of hamstrung by being, you know, sweet and playing it pretty straight when you want a bit of, you know, zaniness from Goldie Hawn, really. I don't think there's been a great Mrs. Claus movie, and please do correct me on this. Obviously, I've been watching quite a few Christmas movies this year
for another podcast.
Bah humbug.
Sorry, I didn't do that right. I didn't do the line reading as you had dictated to me. Sorry, I should probably do that again. Why is that, Helen? What are you talking about? Yes, Helen, what? Please don't hit me again. Yes, Helen, why have you done this?
Why have I watched a movie thing? So I watched a bunch of extra Christmas movies, more than usual, for this Bah Humbug Christmas Movies pod, on which Chris guest starred this week to talk about Noel and Fred Claus.
I figured it was time to elevate your struggling podcast.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I mean, it's like four episodes in. It can't be that struggling.
I would like to register an official complaint with whatever authority overrules this podcast. Helen does some stupid Christmas podcast completely unaffiliated to us, and you're participating, you're plugging it. Here I am, purveyor of the Pilot TV podcast, and all I get is sneers.
You plug it every single week.
Without help. Yeah. And under protest.
You wake up from naps going, Pilot TV podcast. And that's true. That's how you wake up, for the love of God. It's a pathological thing with you.
It is. It is true. So if I were to mention now that we have a Cobra Kai special coming between Christmas and New Year with Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka talking about Cobra Kai season three,
which is awesome.
So all subscribe now, please.
It sounds okay. That's not over egg it, shall we? But sounds pretty good. But yeah, Bah Humbug, episode 4 sounds in particular incredible.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But yes, we watched Noelle, right? And that's going to Mrs. Claus. Julie Haggerty.
Who I love. I mean, anytime she turns up in anything, even in like, you know, a tiny role in She's the Man, she's fantastic. I love her. But she's not the quintessential Mrs. Claus. Partly she's just too slim and glamorous, I think, you know, with respect to Judy Cornwell in Santa Claus the movie. Yeah. She's a little bit more, you know.
Rosy-cheeked?
Rosy-cheeked, exactly. That's the way to do it.
Rosy-cheeked. She is someone that very much echoes Santa.
Exactly.
Peas in a pod. Christmassy peas in a Christmassy pod. Ah, I wish they could be my parents. Get all the best present.
Oh my God.
The movie, and I haven't seen it yet, but I know from having read reviews of it, and I know that it's problematic.
Mm-hmm.
But the recent release, Fat Man, which stars everybody's problematic fave, Mel Gibson, as essentially Santa Claus, but as a kind of
on a mission of revenge. Yeah.
Yeah, and the story is Walton Goggins is the world's greatest hitman who has been hired to assassinate Santa Claus because a kid is disgruntled because he doesn't get the present that he wanted. So he hires this hitman to kill Santa. So Marianne Jean-Baptiste plays Mrs. Claus in that. And from all accounts, she kicks some serious ass in that. Okay. So I haven't seen the film yet. But that sounds like it could be a contender.
I don't know if kicking ass is really what we want Mrs. Claus to do, is it? Miranda Richardson played Mrs. Claus in Fred Claus. I guess she's always reliable. But again, didn't get enough Miranda Richardsoning to do.
No.
You know? I just think there's a great Mrs. Claus movie out there. I think we should write it. I think we can handle it. I think it will be, you know, justice for Mrs. Claus. Every other member of Santa's family has at some point had to save Christmas. So maybe it's time that Mrs. Claus got a look in and got her chance to save Christmas, you know?
I agree. I fully agree. Listen, we have Amon declaring he's going to win an Oscar for a screenplay on the podcast. Helen and I, our Mrs. Claus script it's not really aiming for awards.
No.
The only thing it wants to win is your hearts. And it will. It will. It absolutely will.
Although, warm the cockles.
Yes, though Helen's insistence on writing quite shocking and seemingly gratuitous nudity is.
Look, I didn't watch 15 seasons of Supernatural for nothing, all right? So all those topless shots had to get in there eventually.
Mrs. Claus enters, brackets, ageless, pretty. So in Santa Claus 2, he has to find a Mrs. Claus. Is that Elizabeth Mitchell? I can't remember that movie.
She's nice. I like her.
Okay, all right. But she's not massively memorable.
No.
Okay. Judy Cornwell. Let's move on to the next question then, because we got a couple that we're going to run through because it's Christmas and it's a time of miracles. From @HillFjorn, what was your greatest movie-related Christmas present that you didn't buy yourself, or the best present received in a movie by a character?
Ooh.
The best present received by a character in a movie is unquestionably Belle in Beauty and the Beast when he gives her a library.
That's a pretty good gift.
With multiple library ladders because, like, is it even a library if you've only got one? Oh,
I mean,
oh my goodness,
isn't that what every girl wants for Christmas?
Genuinely.
Multiples.
Multiple library ladders. That's exactly right, Chris.
Yes, that's what I was referring to.
Of course.
Climb those like a tree. I think the best Christmas present, I'd like a Mogwai for Christmas. I think Gizmo was a pretty good Christmas present.
Was he a birthday present or a Christmas present?
Christmas. It's Christmas.
It's Christmas.
I thought Billy's birthday was near Christmas.
Is it? So you're saying it's a... I mean, he'd have been one of those kids that just gets a shitty combined Christmas birthday present. So it's still
for Billy. Yeah, I don't know if I'd trust you with a Mogwai, James, purely because I feel like there's a part of you that would want a gremlin and there's a part of you that would definitely...
I'd like leave a mince pie in his bed and just be like, oh yeah, just save it for later. James, save it for later. Super hungry during the night.
You're right, it is a Christmas present. Before people start writing in indignation, it is a Christmas present. I just remembered it as a birthday present that just happened to be a Christmas. That would have been confusing. That probably what it was in the original script, and then Steven Spielberg went, why don't we just conflate the two and make it a Christmas present? Oh yeah, that's why you're Steven Spielberg.
It's not to say there aren't drawbacks to having the Mogwai, which doesn't end brilliantly for everyone, but
not
I'd say
everyone.
Generally speaking, it was a better present than, you know, Chucky.
That's true. You know what? You're absolutely right. It's a better present also than the air gun or the BB gun in A Christmas Story.
Christmas Story, yeah.
Where he really
put
his eye out nearly with that. So yeah, there are some bad ones out there.
Doesn't Harry get an invisibility cloak for Christmas? Isn't that what Sirius gets him for Christmas?
Yeah, but I mean, it is a hand-me-down. Like, it is his kind of legacy. And
so it's secondhand.
It's basically something that he was supposed to get anyway from his parents, and they just choose to give it to him on Christmas, which kind of feels like cheating to me. I feel like somebody, you know, needed to do some shopping there.
Question for you, Chris. Was the rescue armor meant to be a birthday or Christmas present for Peppa?
We don't know what date her birthday is, so it's hard to tell.
We don't know, do we? You think it's a birthday present?
Birthday.
Because that's a pretty good present. If Tony Stark made me a suit of armor, I'd say that's a pretty good present. I might take that over a library, I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would go with that. I think that's a pretty good one. Although Tony does get her that giant bunny with boobs.
Yeah, I think they're supposed
Iron
to be
Man
arms.
3.
I think
it's
they're supposed
so
to be
bad.
Arms.
Yeah,
they just
I think they
look
are supposed
like
to be arms.
Really?
I mean, even as giant bunnies go, it's a bad giant bunny. The fact that we're having this discussion about whether or not they're arms, that's not a good giant bunny. His thinking on that is
right
genuinely
now.
Baffling. I mean, because I've read a lot of Goop gift guides, so I know the kind of thing that a Pepper type person would want.
You're right.
They are arms.
They're arms. I have been sexually attracted to this rabbit for 7 years.
Is it Jessica Rabbit?
I won't even begin to tell you the erotic thoughts I've had about this rabbit.
Please don't.
I've been turned on by its arms. Oh my God. Merry Christmas, Pepper. Merry Christmas indeed. Speaking of getting arms for Christmas, though, folks, in the Chronicles of Narnia, when Santa Claus turns up and he gives all the lovely children guns and shit. because C.S. Lewis and the movie reimagined Santa Claus as some sort of arms dealer, which is
Hey,
which
kids,
is cool.
Have some weapons.
Back to Batman, yeah.
These are not age-appropriate.
They are, look, they're kings and queens of Narnia. They need what they need, you know? That's a good Santa, actually. We don't talk enough about James Cosmo's Santa in that film.
We did last year when we did the ranking episode.
Yeah, we did.
Die Hard. Does Ellis give Holly that watch as a sort of Christmassy gift? I mean,
it's
I know
not
he's trying
from
to get
Ellis.
Into her knickers.
It's from Takagi. Like, it's a company present. It's a Rolex. He's showing it off, but yeah, it's not from him. It's like a company present.
It's like a Christmas bonus.
Now, obviously, as journalists, we won't be really particularly familiar with the concept of Christmas bonuses, but
What is this bonus?
What is this bonus you speak of?
Are you sure?
Yeah, they gave her a massive bonus.
I know they gave her a massive bonus, but he's talking in that scene as if he gave her that watch himself.
No, he's saying, show the watch. It's not from him. That would be wildly inappropriate. Even he would probably realize that's massively inappropriate.
I think he's been a massive dick.
No, it's from Takagi. He is.
I think so too.
Let's call Jeb Stewart immediately and find out. Or Steven Souza. Whoever picks up first.
I'm quietly judging you. But anyway, Corin, you said whenever we were talking about Die Hard with Corin, you said that you called them terrorists. And They're not terrorists, are they?
Who
they're
said
thieves.
We were terrorists? They are thieves. They are thieves. They're very, very heavily armed thieves with rocket launchers.
You can still be heavily armed. Neil McCauley in Heat is heavily armed and he's still a thief.
It's true.
He's not a terrorist.
It's true.
So I would just, my Christmas gift to Hans Gruber is to absolve him of the charge of terrorism.
That must come as such a relief as he splats.
As he falls from the Nakatomi building, I hope someone clears my name.
I'm a thief, not a terrorist.
Oh, and in fairness, he is moving up the kidnapping, so we should be
he is moving up the kidnapping, yes.
Christmas gifts. Somebody, everyone in Bedford Falls rallies around Jimmy Stewart.
Oh,
I'm going to kill myself. And then they're like,
a sense of personal purpose is the is the best. A renewed sense of purpose.
And $5,000.
Yeah, giving him lots of money. Helps. Yeah. It's the original Kickstarter that basically it's the original GoFundMe campaign.
Yeah.
It really is. Oh, I need lots of money for Christmas. And then they're like, here you go.
I feel like you're being disrespectful right now. So,
I'm not being disrespectful.
No, he's fine. It's no Love Actually.
Oh, yes.
Speaking
that
of
is
Love
correct.
Actually. Love Actually, we do. There are two Christmas presents, I think, that we really see in the movie.
The
and
necklace.
They're both given by Alan Rickman, and they're both contentious.
Yeah.
So he gives the Joni Mitchell CD to Emma Thompson, and he gives his secretary a pearl necklace.
No, he doesn't.
It's a gold necklace.
We will have no pearl necklaces on this podcast.
I'm pretty sure he gives his secretary a pearl necklace, Jimbo.
You definitely don't see that. It might be on the DVD. But yes.
It's a very sexual podcast, this one this week.
For a change.
What's happened?
Yeah, let me just Google it. No, Jimbo, you're right. It is a gold necklace. I apologize.
It's a bit of, I'm going to get more PG rated. Scrooge. Look, Frank, it's a toaster. That's a pretty good
That's a good present. As is the VCR present as well in that film.
That was a good present.
That would have been a good time. Yeah. Mm.
Hustlers is a good Christmas scene where they give each other presents.
Oh my God, yeah. Fancy handbags, fur coats, the works, baby.
That's fun. And doesn't Goodfellas have a scene where like they're just giving money to each other at Christmas?
That's Donnie Brasco
as well. But Goodfellas, I'm pretty sure someone's unwrapping, like Ray Liotta, this is one of the things he gives Karen money. She's unwrapping. This might be wrong in my memory, but I'm remembering a scene where Karen.
We've gone full Inception.
Opens a present and it's like literally just like a couple thousand dollars. And she's like, oh my God. And it's so amazing. I don't think she played by Jimmy Stewart. Oh my God, I got lots of money for Christmas. What about Turbo Man? Fuck him.
No.
I'd say not the Turbo Man, but the cookies were a good friend. Put them down. Put my cookies down. Your wife's cookies.
You are out of this world. You're telling me, my friend. This week, my wife, Fala, made some cookies that, Helen, I wish you could taste these cookies.
They sounded amazing.
They are exquisite.
Down, down, put that cookie down.
Your wife's cookies are out of this world.
No, put the cookie down. It's turbo time.
Good Lord.
If you don't know what we're talking about, the great Swede Mason who takes videos and repackages them on YouTube and whatnot. A few years ago, he did an incredible remix of that scene from Jingle All the Way. And he puts it to heavy dance music
it's
as well.
Amazing.
He also did an incredible MasterChef synesthesia remix, which is one of the catchiest things you'll ever hear. So look for it on YouTube. Swede Mason.
Bass, right?
Buttery biscuit bass.
I like the buttery biscuit bass.
Oh, I love. We should have more songs about biscuits.
We should.
I agree.
What's your greatest movie related Christmas present? What is it?
Here's a question. When Lara Flynn Boyle.
No, that's not how questions work. How questions work is that I ask a question and you answer it,
is
but not with another
gun
question.
Gun rack in Wayne's World a birthday present or a Christmas present?
It's just a present, I think.
Certainly,
yeah, it's not Christmas.
Okay. Not that it would win anyway. But,
no, it's a terrible present.
He does not even have a gun, let alone
Never mind,
many guns,
guns
to necessitate,
which would necessitate
an entire rack.
All right, okay.
Okay.
Don't know if we answered that definitively or indeed at all, but let's move on to the last question of 2020,
oh God.
Which comes from @Cristalla. Which movie Christmas party would you most like to attend and why? I'm just going to go straight in there. It would be the party at the Nakatomi Plaza on Christmas Eve because Wouldn't you just want to say you've been there?
Just to walk in and go, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen,
ladies and gentlemen, not be afraid. Wouldn't you just want to, like, you'd get PTSD? Yes.
Yes.
Mm. You may get shot.
Definitely.
Yes. You may even get thrown out of a building. Sure. But wouldn't it just be a blast to talk about?
I got sent, I think it might have been from Last Exit to Nowhere. I got sent a little card invitation to that Christmas party. I think it came with my, it might have been Die Hard t-shirt.
Mm. Oh, that's nice. Mm. That's very nice.
It's great.
How about the Batman Returns party?
Oh.
Which is interrupted by the penguin on his
Too
giant
many
duck.
Explosive penguins.
No, but the explosive penguins are outside that party. Inside the party, all you have are a bunch of clowns and a giant duck. So it'd be fine.
Fine.
Yes, that's a good
one.
And
you could flirt with people
one.
Under the mistletoe. Be great.
You can, or reveal your secret identity to them as well. Which
Because mistletoe can be deadly if you eat it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So can asbestos if you use it as snow.
Exactly.
But a kiss can be deadlier if you mean it, which is, of course, the other line.
Oh, yes. Anything else? Anything else for Christmas parties, apart from, of course, the peerless classic Office Christmas Party?
I thought you were about to say Love Actually, and, of course, the Art Gallery Christmas Party, which is, you know, terrible.
What happens there?
Well, Alan Rickman
Alan starts Joe rating against Hiker McCatch.
Yeah, in a very inappropriate manner. Mm. But Laura Linney does cop off with Rodrigo Santoro.
Yeah, well.
So there is, you know, I know.
Doesn't go
but
well.
It's a good party for her. Until
momentarily,
so, yeah, yeah. For moments. Yeah. Isn't there the one in On Her Majesty's Secret Service? On Her Majesty's Secret Service. That's like, that'd be a, it's like
that's
a
where she keeps
kitchen
her,
cleaner. That's where she, yeah, that's where she hides the biscuits on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
I should point out as well, someone asked last week about Christmas movies, and we were talking about Christmas movies, franchises that need a Christmas movie, and we said Bond. And then I completely forgot that On Her Majesty's Secret Service is a Christmas movie.
And they have a Christmas party in the Christmas movie, except everyone receives vials of biological agent to kill people with. So, you know,
that's a downer. I mean, we've been to that Empire Christmas party, and, you know, it wasn't the best one, I don't think.
Mm. The apartment has a good Christmas party.
Mm. Great one, actually.
There's loads.
I'm sure we're forgetting some.
Die Hard. We were obviously forgetting something. I mean, this is never meant to be definitive. Quite often, it's basically what just pops into our heads. Speaking of which.
The Jingle Ball in The Night Before. The giant party thrown every year by, and this is a massive spoiler, Michael Shannon's angel drug dealer, who wants to throw a kind of Gatsby-like party where nobody knows that he's the host, and he throws this incredible mad party, and it's got all these celebrities there, and it's got like a cool, you arrive by trains or a tunnel of lights.
Uh-huh.
That looks quite fun, if you
That's
like parties.
That's a good one. Full disclosure, while you were saying that, I was Googling Office Christmas parties in movies, and I came upon an article that talks about the Christmas rave. Christmas Eve rave in Doug Liman's Go. And it's accompanied by a picture of Timothy Oliphant
in a Santa hat.
A shirt and a Santa hat.
I just
need a moment.
Really? Hang on. I just need to Google something quickly.
I'll just share this with you, Helen.
You can't see his glorious hair, so, you know, what does it matter?
But yes, Go, I would say, is a good one. But listen, we mentioned Die Hard. And I've just thought of another good one. Maybe we'll save this for next year, which is the best song in a Christmas movie.
Mm. Best song in a Christmas
movie.
I mean, actually, no,
movie.
Do you know what it is? And like, I will not take any comment on this. It is actually Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas in Meet Me in St. Louis, which isn't even a Christmas movie in that it goes through a full year. But because of that single song, becomes an amazing Christmas movie because that song is so good.
I mean, it's no Christmas Vacation.
That's correct. I like Christmas Vacation. I have it on my mix. For my Christmas mix. But, I mean, it's no Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas with Judy
motherfucking
Garland singing.
And her name is Garland, which is Christmassy.
I know, right?
If she changed the name to Holly Garland.
She'd have been there, right there.
She would have been successful.
Oh, God.
She actually would have made something of her life instead of being a failure. Come on. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Die Hard. That's a good one. It's not Christmas.
It's also a great Christmas song.
But. Yeah. It's a wintry one. But how can anyone argue with the behemoth, the titan of tune that is, it's magic in the air this evening, magic in the air. The world is at our best, you know, when people love and share.
Okay, more Judy Garland, I see.
Yes, that's who did that.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Genuinely better than the person doing the real Kermit voice right now. Genuinely better. Anyway, yes, from Muppet Christmas Carol. I love that song. I love that film so much. One more sleep till Christmas. And soon it will indeed only be one more sleep till Christmas.
Oh, anyway. I hate that form of words. But okay, sure. I was actually rewatching Mickey's Christmas Carol, which was something we had growing up. It's on
podcast.
Disney. I wasn't nostalgia. And there's a very nice Merry Christmas song in that, which I find I remembered from start to finish, which was terrifying because I haven't seen it in like a long time.
That's lovely. So it is.
Oh,
that
it's
is
really
lovely.
Nice.
Lovely enough. Lovely enough. But listen, that's enough for the, I don't know why I'm doing this. That's enough for the listener question section for the year, folks, for the year. 2 more weeks. We'll be back in 2 more weeks. Thank you so much for those questions.
Weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks.
See, I went Total Recall and you went Revenge of the Sith, but you know, sure.
No, I was going Total Recall as well.
How are you?
2 weeks.
I think
you're going,
two weeks. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Unlimited.
Unlimited presents.
I don't even know what we're doing at this point.
Oh dear. I think we've gone totally and utterly bonkers in this week's podcast. I think we finally flipped. This is it. We finally snapped. The perfect time then to have a guest, I would say, whilst we recover. Let's have, who should we have? Should we have David Oyelowo?
Yeah.
Let's have David Oyelowo, who is returning to the podcast. He's been on a number of times before. I think this might be his fourth appearance. I always really enjoy talking to David. He's in 2 movies out this week. He's in the rather charming fantasy movie called Come Away, in which he co-stars with Angelina Jolie as parents who suffer a terrible tragedy in their lives. And as a result, their children retreat into a fantasy world. Their children just happen to be called Alice and Peter, and the fantasy worlds into which they retreat look an awful lot like Wonderland and Neverland. So this is a very high concept origin story / blending of the stories of Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland. And David Oyelowo is at the heart of that. He is also up front and center alongside Felicity Jones and George Clooney in Clooney's latest movie as director, The Midnight Sky, which is on Netflix this week. Now, thing is, I interviewed David for this a few weeks ago before I knew that Midnight Sky was coming out on this day, so we don't really talk about that movie at all, but we do talk about Come Away and just how he's coping with the pandemic and all sorts of stuff. As I say, always have a blast talking to Mr. Oyelowo. Here you go. Do please enjoy. Delighted to be joined on the Emperor Podcast in lockdown, of course, by the star of Come Away, Mr. David Oyelowo. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. Great to see you again, Chris.
It's very good to see your face. The last time I was in London a couple of years ago, I think it was for Gringo.
Yeah. No, actually, that is Cloverfield Paradox.
Yeah, Cloverfield Paradox. That's right. Yeah. We did a Q&A.
That's right.
How's your pandemic been, David?
what a way to put it. How's the pandemic? It's been look, you take the silver linings. I've had a lot of time at home with my family, and that's something that hasn't been the case in the last few years because I've been blessed to be doing a bunch of movies. It's been nice to be home. I did manage to squeeze in a film in Canada just recently. We shot that through the pandemic, so I was out there in British Columbia for about 2.5 months. But apart from that, it's just watching as this slow motion car crash is happening and just hoping that we all survive it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, obviously, I'm over here in London, you're over there in the States, and the States at the moment seems to be particularly crazy. So, there's potentially vaccines on the way. So hopefully everything's going to be fine, but it still seems to be a little bit of a out of control dumpster fire, if I may, in the States. Is it particularly worrying being over there at the moment?
It is worrying. It is worrying because we have a huge vacuum of leadership and consensus around how to deal with the pandemic. You know, it's one thing to have a challenging situation. It's another thing when you don't seem to have any kind of agreed upon plan as to how to tackle it. And that just makes for a very unsettling environment. But, you know, personally, I'm blessed. I have a home in which there's plenty of space. My kids are here doing their Zoom school, you know, so we feel okay. but the nation itself feels just very, very, very unsettled.
Yeah, absolutely. But hopefully, fingers crossed, everything will begin to rightify itself sooner rather than later. So hopefully. You're at home right now.
Yes.
You have the poster for Come Away behind you in a very, very rudimentary fashion, David. Did you put this up yourself?
I did. I used paper clips to do at the top. It fell down a few times. So, trial and error. But I think we're going to be good now, Chris.
I think we're going to be good. If it begins to go, if the blue tack begins to fade and it begins
please
to
warn
slowly,
me, because I'll no doubt be in the middle of saying something poignant and then it'll...
It'll slap you in the face, absolutely. But this is a movie, I think, that is, you know, it is beautifully timed. I know that you wrapped it a while ago. It was at Sundance, I want to say this year, but this year seems like it's 10 years long. But it was this year's Sundance.
It was this year, believe it or not,
And it feels like it's the right movie for the right time, because it's a movie, I think, that's ultimately about healing. I think in that classic great tradition of kids' films and kids' literature, this really puts you through the emotional ringer. Was that an appeal? I mean, your character goes to some pretty dark places in this, and I think, you know, people might be expecting this to be a fun, frothy kids' fantasy. There is that element as well, but it's also real dark emotional truth here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that drew me to it. You know, we're billing it as a kind of an origin story of not only Alice in Wonderland, but Peter Pan as well, the worlds of Neverland and Wonderland. And anyone who knows the circumstances out of which both J.M. Barrie and Lewis Carroll wrote these stories would be able to tell you that it wasn't cupcakes and fairies. You know, it was often challenging circumstances that gave birth to these narratives that have now become known as fairy tales. But ours is a film the likes of which I loved growing up. You know, I remember watching E.T., and even though that is indisputably a fantasy, fun, entertaining movie, but it's also the first time I saw a single parent family in a film growing up. So this is a family that were going through something, and then these kids escape into their imagination and this fantastical space that helps them cope with the realities of what's going on in their lives. And that's what Come Away does as well. You know, myself and Angelina Jolie playing these kids' parents go through an unthinkable challenge, and the whole family is having to navigate it. And whilst myself and Angie's characters don't handle it very well, the kids somehow cope using their imaginations. And I would argue that, you know, that fine line between fantasy and reality is where you can really, I don't know, engender a conversation in a family, you know. So I'm hoping to make movies that have both magic and meaning, and that's what, you know, I think Brenda Chapman has done a pretty good job of walking that line with this film.
There's a thread throughout the film about, as you say, kids have imagination, and adults, as they get older, they begin to reject that, they begin to put away childish things, they become more closed off. And certainly I think that's something that affects your character, Jack, and Angelina's character as well. Very much that they don't allow the possibility of joy. They don't allow the possibility of hope in.
Yeah. And I think anyone and everyone who's had children or who has faced those challenges that, you know, you live long enough, you're going to experience loss. And, you know, one of the things that loss, challenge, growing older, gaining responsibility does is it starts to diminish your ability to have that sort of wide-eyed, childlike, naive approach to life. And whereas sometimes that's necessitous in order to be able to embrace your responsibilities, there are elements of being filled with joy, hope, imagination, fun, that can also help one through these difficult times. I mean, there's that phrase, if I didn't laugh, I would cry. You know, sometimes sometimes you just got to find the laugh, otherwise it just gets a little too heavy.
And it looks like it was a fun film to shoot. I mean, there are times when you are going, it seems like they're just bringing on a procession of great acting talent, great British acting talent, for you to act opposite. So, you know, obviously Angelina's not British, but you got this, you know, many, many scenes with Angelina. But then if that wasn't enough, they wheel out, and again, Clark Peters isn't British, but we'll claim him. And,
yes,
so they wheel out Clark Peters, and then they have Michael Caine. You think, well, surely they can't top Michael Caine. Then out comes Jacoby, for God's sake. So was it an interesting experience for you to film with those giants?
It really, really was. I mean, you know, actors who you grew up watching, the thought of being in a movie, even in their presence, is just so far away from your notion of what's going to happen. But Michael Caine was actually the weirdest, because it's Michael Caine. And it's Michael Caine doing that iconic voice. It was so weird to act opposite him, because I would literally in the scene be thinking, stop doing Michael Caine. That's really that's really weird that you're Michael Caine and you're doing an impersonation of Michael. I mean, he is that guy. He literally has that voice.
He is Michael Caine. I mean, it's that's his. He can't do anything about it. That's just the way he sounds. That's it.
But it still sounds unreal. It still sounds unreal. I honestly, the hardest piece of acting I did in Come Away was trying to stay in character whilst Michael Caine was being Michael Caine. Because I literally constantly wanted to break character and go, you with the voice, gah.
And you're waiting for Brenda Chapman to call cut, and then suddenly he'll go, oh, hello, darling. How are you
exactly
today?
Exactly. But never happened.
But it's not. No. It is Michael Caine sounding exactly like Michael Caine. And, you know, David, you're a guy who knows your way around accents, and you're a guy who knows your way around voices. I don't think I've ever asked you this. Do you have a facility for impressions?
Oh, don't ask me to do Michael Caine. I can't do Michael Caine. That's why it was so weird, because it's so hard to do, and he was doing Michael Caine so well. So I was very impressed by him.
But everybody's got, are you supposed to blow the bloody doors off in them? So, yeah, well, come on.
You have literally just proved why it is a bad idea to do a Michael Caine impression.
Because I nailed it. And you can't top what I just did. That's pretty much.
You were wonderfully adequate.
That's the best piece of direction I've had in years. Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed. Of course, now you are a practiced director yourself. I'm very, very excited to see your debut, The Waterman, when it comes out. Presumably next year it'll be out in the UK.
Yes. Early part of next year, it'll be out. Some nice news coming about that soon in terms of its distribution. It was an amazing experience. And it was yet another film, the likes of which I have loved growing up, seen less of now, and wanted to be a part of, because, you know, these Amblin-esque films that I loved growing up that had both magic and meaning could be both entertaining, but for both grown-ups and kids at the same time. And, you know, The Waterman is about an 11-year-old kid whose mother is ill, and they move to this tiny town. And there is this legend of the Waterman, who supposedly has the gift of cheating death. And so this kid teams up with a 14-year-old girl to find this mythic figure who he hopes is going to be able to save his mom. And it's largely about their adventure as they pursue the Waterman. And I just, you know, it has aspects of fairy tale and fantastical and magical realism about it, but it also deals with real life challenges we face. And those are the kind of films I really love. Films I can watch with my family, and we can be both entertained, but also have a discussion about it afterwards.
So hopefully we'll talk about that. If you can come back in the pod whenever that comes out in the UK next year. But
it's a date, Chris.
It's a date. Listen, this is legally binding, David. This is legally binding.
Fine with
and
me.
And maybe, here's the thing, it'll give you a few months to work on that Michael Caine impression of yours. if you could possibly
even
come close.
Well, you set the bar so low.
Oh, that, well, that is an absolute disgrace.
Oh, my God.
She was only 16.
It's getting better. I will give you that. You're warming up into it now. You're warming up into it. Very good, very good.
But we will talk about The Waterman whenever it is time to talk about The Waterman. But in terms of directing, who have you been magpieing from your entire career? Who have you been really, when you're on set and you're being directed by someone, who have you been filing notes and little things that they do away for later use?
It's a great question because I have always known that I would like to direct at some point, and I've been so privileged to work with some brilliant directors, and I have intentionally been gleaning and watching as I go. And look, I have a career that has been graced by the likes of Anthony Minghella and Spielberg and Ava DuVernay and Chris McQuarrie and Mira Nair, you know, now Brenda Chapman.
I am showing off,
but I'm also demonstrating I have no excuse when it comes to having learned a few things along the way. I will say, though, you learn almost as much from bad directors as you do good directors, because, you know, there is nothing more useful than knowing what you shouldn't do and what is ill-advised to do, as well as trying to do what you should do. So, you know, they've all been experiences that have helped me hopefully be the best director I can be. It's only my first one, so hopefully I'll continue to grow.
And those bad directors are, David, who were they?
Those are names I'm not going to drop because that would be bad.
Save it for the memoirs.
Yes, yes. When I'm old and I don't care.
Precisely, precisely. But this movie, as you mentioned, is directed by Brenda Chapman, who co-directed Brave for Pixar, animated movie, obviously taking the step into the live action realm. What was it like working with her, and was she surprised by how fast things could move, given that she's been working in a realm where it takes 4 years for a shot to be finished sometimes?
Yeah, it was definitely a learning curve for her, you know, because in animation you just make these characters do whatever you want them to do, and in live action you have these weird beings who talk back at you as go, "Oh, would my character do that?" You know, so it was interesting getting to see her interact with her characters who were not her creations this time. And I actually think it's something she really embraced and enjoyed, because, you know, animation is in the reverse to live action. You spend a lot of time developing the story on an animated movie, and then a lot of time in the drawings, and then it's very quickly you have the actors come in and just do the voices. They're there for 2-3 days and they're gone. Whereas with this, you know, you develop the film, but it can take a lot of time to shoot the thing itself, and so you're interacting with the creation of the characters in real time for longer. And I think that's something that was, you know, initially discombobulating for her, but I thought she did a magnificent job. And the thing that she does so well, whether it's Lion King or Prince of Egypt or Brave, is that, again, she is able to walk that fine line between reality and fantasy so well, and to see them coexist is a very satisfying thing.
I'm going to let you go now and give you some time to work on that Michael Caine, because frankly, David, that was an act of cowardice, the likes of which I have rarely seen on the Empire podcast.
Yeah, you could. You say cowardice, I say wisdom.
We'll see. Time will judge the victor in the end. Time will prove one of us right. David, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. And that was David Oyelowo refusing to do a Michael Caine impression, and he calls himself a professional. I'll get him to do it one day, mark my words. And that is it for this first part of the last podcast of 2020. Yes, the show has turned out to be a big old lengthy pod, even by our standards, so I have decided to split it into two parts, as I suggested I might do last week. Part the second contains the movie news, the movie reviews, including looks at The Midnight Sky and Come Away, and an interview with Michael Potts, Coleman Domingo, and Glenn Turman, stars of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. So do please listen to that. In the meantime, it's a very brief goodbye from me. See you on the other side, you mothers.